Welcome to another episode of High Velocity Radio. I'm your host today, Kevin Finn. Lee and Stone are out in Dallas at the ASTD trade show, and they should be getting started right about now. But we have a great show for you today. We're doing our Sandy Springs Chamber of Commerce special. And we have Christine Heller with the Sandy Springs and Perimeter Chamber of Commerce here with us. Welcome, Christine. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine this morning. How are you?
I am doing absolutely fabulous. You brought two great guests with you today. You brought Catherine Siebold, attorney at law with for Wills, Trust, and Estates. And you also brought with you Jubal J. Gatewood with Morgan Stanley. So welcome to you people also.
We're glad to be here.
Awesome. Well, Christine, just give me a little background about you and how you got into all this work.
Well, after spending 25 or so years in corporate America, I finally had an opportunity to give back, basically to give back to the community.
Definitely.
I relocated to Sandy Springs after living in Alpharetta for many years and working in a variety of IT and product management positions. And I really wanted to find a way to get involved with the local community, and I ended up here as a communications director for the Sandy Springs Chamber, and I can honestly tell you I've never had more fun.
Well, it's got to be definitely a really gratifying job, I have to think.
Oh, very much so. It's like being a matchmaker every day, just putting people together, meeting and greeting, attending events, setting up events, having fun.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's wonderful.
Well, definitely. So what's the mission of the Sandy Springs Chamber?
Plainly put, the mission of the Sandy Springs Perimeter Chamber is to maximize its members' success, the community's competitiveness, and the area's economic prosperity. We partner with the City of Sandy Springs in many economic development initiatives and in many social initiatives designed to bring our community members together.
Awesome. Well, I know you guys are doing a great job. I absolutely love Sandy Springs. You have a lot of great stuff going on, but are there any new projects coming up here in the future?
Right now, we're really active in the healthcare arena and also with workforce development. We have two very active committees in these two areas, and we're looking at piloting a program to incentivize people to make healthier lifestyle choices. And so there'll be more information coming up on that. We've also been working with the local business people and the educators in the region to do more along the lines of preparing our students in high school to better meet the needs of the business community when they get out of school, whether it be going on to college or going on to trade school. So we've been working hard on that.
Definitely. Well, that sounds really important. So the student program, are you guys, what are you guys doing with it? Is it more like stock classes, different business classes in high school? Or?
Well, working with Sandy Springs Education Force, which is a nonprofit designed for the younger mm-hmm. students,
yeah,
basically, what we want to do is work with businesses to develop internship programs so that kids have a way to learn some on-the-job training before they, you know, actually enter the workforce. And so that's where the majority of the focus is going to be, is preparing students for their jobs in the future and having them stay here in Sandy Springs instead of going elsewhere.
I love that. I have to think the companies probably are jumping all over that, different businesses.
Absolutely.
How can a business listening in right now maybe reach out and sign up for that program?
Well, you definitely need to give us a call at the chamber, either talk to me or my associate. The president of the chamber is Tom Mahaffey, and we would love to hear from you if you would like to get involved.
So exactly what does the director of communications and events do?
Well, I communicate with the community to let people know what's going on, what's coming up. We schedule events. We put the word out, public relations, coordinate liaison with the newspapers and the local radio stations, and we show up for the events and write articles and send out more emails and social media.
Definitely.
A little bit of everything, whatever needs to be done to communicate to the community.
Well, are there any new events or old events coming up and that people can go to and help out?
Yes. We we just restarted our Business After Hours networking initiative, and we are calling our new initiative Tuned Up Tuesdays. So the first Tuesday of every month, we'll be having a happy hour business networking event for people to attend. And this coming event will be at Hammocks Trading Company on Roswell Road. And we'll be going to different member restaurants and establishments to showcase what they have to offer in terms of delicious food and drinks. We're also having a Women's Business Network fashion show coming up to benefit the Drake House. And so you can tune in to the Sandy Springs Perimeter Chamber of Commerce website to see more information about upcoming events.
Okay. Well, what is that website for anyone listening?
It's sspchamber.com.
Well, what's the best way for people to get involved in their local chamber? I know a lot of people don't realize that they can get involved. So how do they do that?
Well, a great way to do that is to start by coming to an event. We have events in the morning, breakfast time. We have events at lunchtime and then after hours. The best thing to do then is to kind of try before you buy, if you will. We are open to new members. We are open to people who aren't members of the chamber as well. We just like to have people come and see what we have to offer. And then the best way to get involved is to join the chamber and then show up.
Okay. What's like the level of involvement that you guys really need from? Is there a little bit to people that can be board members, or
yes,
how does that work?
Yes, it depends on what kind of time you have to dedicate. We welcome volunteers. Since we are a nonprofit organization, we do have a lot to do and a small staff, so we rely on our community volunteers. So there's something for everybody. I mean, it just depends on what kind of time people have to give. We're always looking for support.
Okay. Well, how do people reach out to the chamber again? Just one last time before we talk to your great guests.
Well, you can look on our website, www.sspchamber.com, or give us a call at the office. Again, I'm looking forward to working with you all.
Definitely. Well, thank you so much. Well, we're going to talk to your great guest today. I know you know Catherine, right? How long have you guys known each other?
We've known each other for the past year or so.
Okay. So, Catherine, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
And who have you brought with us today?
Okay. I'm Catherine Siebold, and as Christine said, I am a solo practitioner here in the Sandy Springs community, but I actually serve clients all over the metro Atlanta area, providing legal advice and direction and counsel on wills, trusts, powers of attorney, and probate administration. And with me today is a value colleague, Jubal Gatwood. And Jubal is a certified financial planner with Morgan Stanley. And the interesting thing about our teamwork today is that Jubal works for a very large financial advising corporation, and I work for a very small law firm. But what we want to stress to our listeners is how we work as a team, how financial advisors work as a team to guide families and business owners to make the best possible decisions with their hard-earned dollars. And one of the reasons we were thrilled to get the call from Christine about participating this morning is that we all know that, frankly, times have been tough. Whether you're an employee for one of Sandy Springs or Northside area's largest corporations, or whether you run your own small business, every dollar counts. And what Jubal and I do every day with other key advisors like CPAs and insurance advisors is we help families and business owners determine what is the best way to put their dollars to work to save for the future, for retirement, or to pass money along to the next generation. And so today, we'd like to both offer some perspective on how that teamwork happens. Now, what we do know is that a lot of listeners out there probably don't trust big banks or lawyers very much.
Big surprise.
Yeah, after everything that's happened. And so it's hard to know who to trust. And very frankly, that's where being a member of a community chamber of commerce can make a lot of difference. I actually meet other business owners and family in the community. I attend meetings. I give explanations. And as Jubal is about to describe, sometimes it's very hard. It's intimidating to understand how the market works, what investments make sense. It's hard for me to explain what basic legal concepts are in terms that people can understand. And we practice at that. And we also share information we receive through the continuing education that we receive as financial advisors and professionals, and we compare notes. And so that's one thing, one of the things that Jubal and I do as colleagues, working for two very different kinds of organizations to help families and business owners.
Well, it's great to see that the big corporations can work with the small people. You guys work together and you help each other out, and you're not trying to compete for business. That's really great.
Absolutely.
That's right. And we do very different things. This is something a lot of people out there in the marketplace might not understand. I cannot and will not give financial advice. That is something I'm not qualified to do. There are securities license examinations that are required in order for an individual like Jubal to obtain his certification, which he's going to talk about in a second. Mm-hmm. Similarly, Jubal's got to be very careful not to give legal advice. And that's why we compare notes. Many teams of advisors, people who work for other law firms, people who work with other wealth advisory firms, we try to compare notes, but stay well clear of giving advice that we're not qualified to give.
Well, it seems like murky waters that are hard to navigate, and people are trying to do this by themselves when they need to really come to the professionals for it. So, Jubal, tell us about the many letters after your name and what they mean.
Sure. I hold two designations, actually. One can really help business owners out a lot. It's a chartered retirement plan specialist. I work with companies setting up a business retirement plan that's appropriate for them, whether that's what everyone knows about well is the 401k plans, but we go well beyond that if their needs can be met better that way. Mm-hmm. The second one is a chartered, what Kathy just mentioned a second ago, certified financial planner. This is someone that's gone through a little bit more extensive training and has gone through a testing process as well to not provide legal advice or tax advice, but to have a better understanding and in a better working relationship with those professionals as well. So we know a little bit more, but definitely do not cross into the area of providing that advice.
Okay. Well, do you have some tips for our listeners maybe about family financial and estate planning for them?
As far as working with clients, I mean, the most important part of my job is not really just, you know, investments. Everyone thinks mm-hmm. about that. Yeah. But the more important part is sitting down with clients and having an understanding of, you know, what their financial needs are. Do you want to retire at 65 like most folks, or do you want to keep working? What does your money mean to you? Some clients want to pass it on to their children, and some clients say, well, we'll provide a good service for clients or for the children, but let them work on their own after that.
Okay. Can you guys both walk me through a customer engagement? I'd be really interested. I know our listeners would too, of how a customer would come to you guys and how they start out and what that really looks like.
It can either start on one end or the other, but usually a business owner's clients coming in and sitting down, either they'll need financial advice or legal advice, and we'll just go through a questionnaire sort of process. Ask them, and one of mine towards the end always is, do you have an accountant? And also, do you have a will or an estate planning attorney already? And if the answer to those is no, we need to make sure we're going to fill that in. So as soon as I know that they need these kind of documents and set in place, I'm going to contact Kathy Seabolt or another estate planning attorney if they're already currently working with one to make sure that these documents are filled in. But I'll pass them back over to that individual and make sure that they have that conversation with them.
Well, how do you get your clients to open up? Because money to people is a very personal thing. And to share that with someone and open up about maybe their financial mistakes or what they're doing here or there or doing that is really difficult. How do you guys deal with that?
Well, it's funny you should ask that, Kevin. One of the things that when I hear from a prospective client, I always warn them in advance that I'm going to ask them a lot of nosy questions about their family and their finances. You're absolutely right that that's tough for folks, especially after the difficult financial times that we've all experienced. All of my clients come in for their initial consultation having fewer assets than they would like to, and certainly many of them fewer assets than they did 5 years ago. And my clients range from brand new families starting out, perhaps they're expecting their first child, or their family is growing and they feel uncomfortable that they don't have their estate plan in place, all the way to clients who are really facing the end of the life cycle. Perhaps they're ill or frail, or they're folks in the middle, like me, who have aging parents that they're worrying about, and also younger 20, 30-something age children who are struggling in the marketplace, in the workforce. And so at every step of the life cycle, my clients come in and have a high level of anxiety about what they still have, what they've worked for, what they need in the future, and they have a hard time sharing those details. That's why I think for both Jubal and myself and any other advisor who helps families and business owners in this space, we have to be good listeners and we have to be patient. And we have to reassure individuals that whatever assets they have, it's what they've worked for and it's what's important. So it does take a little encouragement. People are also easily intimidated. There's a lot of legalese on my side of the fence, and there's a lot of high finance and math and market movement and terms that individuals don't understand on Jubal's side of the advisory equation. And so our goal as advisors is to break through that, to explain to people what we do in terms they can understand, and to match up our suggestions with what their worries are.
Wow, that's a lot of great stuff. How do you guys deal with the stuff I hear all the time? It's misinformation. You hear about the guy that's like, I don't need a financial planner. My brother's cousin's wife told me if I invest this $1,000 in dinar, I'm going to make $200 million. So I've got, that's my retirement right there. How do you guys deal with all that misinformation?
Yeah, like we mentioned earlier, I mean, it's really not about just the investments alone itself, which that's an important part. But it's the planning, it's the working with the person that owns those assets, but also it's about sort of asset location at the same time. I mean, you don't want to put everything in this one account. You want to kind of spread it around a little bit, especially when you're talking estate planning. I mean, we want to put money aside in trust if that's appropriate for that particular client, and make sure we have them in different areas.
All right, well, let's really dig deep. I want to dig deep into what goes into a family financial plan or an estate plan. Like, what goes into those things? Because I don't think a lot of people know. They know they need it, but they don't know the details or all the little specifics of it.
Yeah, we're coming over a lot of statements, whether it's just generally just 401k statements and taxable statements, but also I'm looking at Social Security statements. You know, what are we expecting from that end? And we'll go through the process and just, you know, what are your current needs? What do you think your future needs are going to be? Do you want to buy the house, down on the beach, or do you want to live in the mountains, or do you just not want to do any of that and go into a nursing home? I mean, we're planning for the end of days for clients.
Yeah. Do you guys ever deal with people that have unrealistic goals that say, hey, I'm 32, by 38, I want to be retired, I want to have a house out in France, and I want a beach home, and make it happen, make your magic happen.
Yeah, believe it or not, more so often than other times, but yeah, we do have to sit, and that's part of the process too, is just sitting down and sort of setting the expectations. You know, what can your future look like? Maybe you don't have the house in France, but you know, maybe you can have a second home somewhere else. But it is really about setting the expectations for them.
Definitely.
The other thing I'll interject here, Kevin, that Christine mentioned earlier, the emphasis on health care services. And when Jubal and I and others who advise clients try to set expectations and get folks to be reasonable about how far their money is going to go, healthcare services looms large.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
The numbers are escalating at a rapid clip. And even here in Metro Atlanta area, we're looking at $4,000 or $5,000 a month for assisted living facilities.
Wow.
And $10,000 to $12,000 a month for skilled nursing care. And when you do the math on that, individuals who believe they have saved enough begin to get anxious. And that's where we have to help them look at the number of years that they have left to work. If they're capable of working longer and want to, that we help them see how important that might be. And that's where a financial planner has the models and information and can show how saving X amount over a period of years and diversifying their investments, which is something that people
definitely
can address, may protect them. Right now, the market's riding up, as we all know, but we've all experienced what happens when the market rides down.
All right, Jewel, we'll talk about diversification just a little bit and why it's so important.
Sure. In the simplest form, diversification means let's not put all of your eggs in one basket. We definitely want to spread it around a little bit, make sure it's in different areas, and every type of investment has a different type of goal. So we want to make sure that the goals line up with the goals of the financial plan for the client.
Okay, definitely. So how early should someone start saving for or get a financial plan? I've heard scary stuff as you need to be 22. If you want to retire by 60, you need to start saving when you're 22 years old. And I missed that boat by a little bit, so I'm a little scared. When should people start?
Sure, absolutely. The earlier, the better. I mean, compounding interest is just an amazing thing. So the earlier you start, if you can come out of college and start in your company's 401k plan, hey, that's a great start, and we're getting off in the right direction. But I've sat down with clients, late 50s, early 60s or so, and say, you know, this is where I am. What can I do going forward? And we just need to have that brass conversation as far as what can we expect, you know, for the future needs. And you know, you might have to work till a little bit longer than you had anticipated, but this is what your goals what you can achieve.
Okay, Catherine, what can people do with wills, trusts, and estates in that regard, and what should they do?
Okay. You know, Jubal mentioned earlier that when he sits down with a prospective client or brings a new client into his practice, he starts looking for where are the other advisors. Do they have an accountant that they rely on who keeps them current on the latest tax rules? Do they have their estate planning documents in place? The reverse is also true. When I bring on a new client who does not have their estate plan in place and or needs to update it, and I'm going to address what is an estate plan in just a second.
Good, I need to know.
Yeah. I also look for, are they getting an investment advice? A lot of times I see clients who have a 401k, they may have a couple of IRAs, they may handle their own investing. Sometimes that's been a successful journey or adventure for them, sometimes it has not been. And so I look for opportunities to encourage clients to bring advisors in that are going to absolutely maximize their dollar. Now, what is an estate plan? Kevin, you just asked, that's a fancy term for two or three very important pieces of paper. A will is the very most important piece of paper in terms of an estate plan that directs how you want your property to be distributed at your death. And we're going to talk in a little bit about some of the most common myths and misunderstandings about wills. But that and only that will make sure that your particular preferences and priorities for how your estate is left behind are handled at your death. The other two documents that comprise an estate plan is really paperwork for life. And I tell all of my clients, estate planning is really not about dying. It's about living. You would be amazed at the very young clients that I see, or the midlife clients, or even elderly clients, who make different decisions about how they're going to manage matters in life, both family relationships and financial decisions, because they've gone through an estate planning process. And the two documents that we encourage all clients to have in place really address life choices. The first is a financial power of attorney for finances, which says if I'm incapacitated, either because I am physically not able to take care of my own affairs or because I'm not able to think through my decisions, who do I trust? Who do I know can step in for me and make those critical decisions? And you can imagine how difficult that might be if someone hasn't made those decisions and have it in the appropriate form. in terms of a completely well-executed power of attorney for finances that's witnessed and notarized and meets all of Georgia's legal requirements. What we're going to talk about in a second are people who draw these documents up themselves, and I see every day the unintended consequences and difficulties when people do type up their own documents and hope that they're going to work when an urgent matter arises. Mm-hmm. The other document that's part of an estate plan is one we've all heard about, and that's an advance directive for health care. I wish we had a snappier name for it here in Georgia. But it is the combination of the living will and the power of attorney for health care. Both of those documents were what Georgia used up until recently, and they perform two very different functions. People get them confused. The living will is the document which says, this is how I want my person treated when an end-of-life decision has to be made. A power of attorney for health care, on the other hand, gives certain individuals the authority to talk to doctors and to review medical records for me. And under those very, very strict HIPAA privacy laws, most of us see information about that when we visit the doctor's office. Mm-hmm. Without this new form, the people that we trust the most to make medical decisions for us, if we can't make them on our own, really causes a lot of stress and heartache during a medical emergency.
Can imagine.
So if you string those things together, a will, which may or may not include trust, a power of attorney for finances, and an advance directive for health care, having that paperwork in place all together is what we call an estate plan.
Well, that is good to know. I did not know any of that. Mm-hmm. So estate plan sounds really scary when you think about it. I feel like I need to have a couple $1 million and be drinking tea every day. And but before we go into these myths you were talking about, I want to talk about the consequences of not having an estate plan. What are the consequences if you don't have it? Who deals with all that stuff if you don't put a thing in place?
Okay, so let's say we have a family or a business owner, and they are clients of Jubal Gatwood at Morgan Stanley. And Jubal has helped this family maximize their retirement dollars. Let's say that one parent in this family unit worked for a large corporation and has some had some 401k dollars, and then they got laid off. They got a package to leave that big company. And here in the North Side, Sandy Springs area, we know a lot of individuals who have faced that dilemma. And so Jubal has helped that family member roll over that 401k money and put it into an IRA that best suits his or her family's needs. And then the family has built a small business enterprise. And they have perhaps young adult children. And maybe those young adult children are not making the greatest choices right now.
Really? Young people making bad choices?
Or perhaps they're having a hard time finding jobs, and they're still somewhat financially dependent on their parents. And what I'm describing now is a scenario that faces a lot of families in our community. So let's say one of those parents passes away without an estate plan. And let's say the business is actually done very well and actually has a pretty high value. Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that's going to occur here is that perhaps we haven't done good tax planning. Part of an estate planning process, and when you're working with a financial advisor, is to understand the impact of the current estate taxes, but more importantly, income taxes, and being able to advise that family how to organize their assets to make sure that the surviving members of that family pay as few tax dollars as possible. And without getting lost in the high weeds here, that's particularly important when IRAs are one of the family's largest assets. Knowing how to put the estate planning documents together in such a way that the family understands tax implications. The most important thing that a will or the trust that we might tuck inside a will, and a lot of people, Kevin, believe that trusts are only for rich or shifty people. And that's not so. Trusts are really routine and common in today's estate planning world. It's the way that we leave money to the next generation in a safe way inside a will. We stretch out their distributions over time to make sure they're mature enough to handle what their parents or grandparents leave behind. So if you don't have a will or a trust, what's going to happen is that your estate is going to be distributed according to the laws of the state of Georgia.
Uh-oh, what are those?
Here comes a lot of where the myths and misunderstandings are, and I have more fun making talks to community and business groups and debunking some of these myths. People will say that if they pass away, the state of Georgia gets their estate. There is nothing more untrue than this. Of all the myths about wills and not having one, this is the absolute worst. None of us have lost a friend, a neighbor, a work colleague, or a loved one and been attending the little memorial luncheon and had the state police show up and string yellow tape across the person's house. Of course, the state of Georgia does not take the property if there's no will. The reason that this myth is perpetuated is that the state of Georgia then does have to decide who does receive that person's assets because they didn't leave the paperwork behind to explain how they wanted it to be distributed. And so what does the state do? I know we're on the radio, so I can't use visual aids, but I want everybody to imagine a family tree, right? Most of us have seen these diagrams, or perhaps our grandma had one embroidered on the kitchen wall, right? What the state of Georgia does is they use the family tree to decide who would logically receive the assets of the deceased person if there is no will. For instance, if the deceased person has a spouse, how many of us would guess that the deceased person's spouse would inherit their entire estate?
I would.
That's true, unless the deceased person has minor children. If the deceased person has minor children, then their minor children can inherit up to two-thirds of their entire estate. So here I am looking across the table, across the mic at my friend Jubal, and he has two little girls and a baby boy on the way. If something happened to Jubal and he did not have a will, the state of Georgia would then give one-third of his assets to his wife and two-thirds of his assets to his two living children. And because minors cannot receive assets in the state of Georgia under the law, and it's this way in every state in the union, poor Jubal's widow would have to deal with being the conservator, a fancy term for a court-supervised monitor of her young daughter's funds. That is a mess.
I can imagine. It sounds like a mess.
It is a mess. But it's the way the law protects minor children.
Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds good. I loved what you said about trust. Trust seemed like the perfect solution for anyone. If you have maybe the minor or the teenager that really isn't that financially secure or wastes too much money, you can set up a trust that gives them sort of an allowance. It's like an allowance system, right?
You know what, Kevin? I don't use that term in my practice, but I'm going to start. Because that's a great way of explaining the way a trust works. So let's say that you have some young adult children. They're still getting their education, and they really don't need access to a large sum of money. And what is a large sum of money today? I think $50,000 or $60,000 is
too.
A large sum of money today. And most of us, I know this sounds kind of morbid, we're worth a lot more dead than alive. Most of us have life insurance or assets that would only be free, like our home. We're seeing values rebound. Here in beautiful downtown Sandy Springs, especially, we're seeing our housing values really tick up fast because of our great school systems. And so if all of a sudden the family home is being sold, then those are assets perhaps for those young adults. So how does a trust work? You know, people think of Fort Knox. They think of these complicated, they think of it locked up somehow. A trust is really four or five paragraphs on a piece of paper which lay out how that allowance will work. And then once the person has passed away and the trust that is those four or five paragraphs on a piece of paper comes to life, it's really simply a bank account. Or it might be an investment account at a firm like Morgan Stanley with an investment advisor that's giving the trustee of that account advice on how to manage the assets.
Mm-hmm. And trust always have this negative connotation, but they're really just great things that make it so you can't waste all your money away.
That's right. So how would that allowance work? Initially, it might say, for my young adult, the trust would provide enough money for school tuition, for dorm fees, for that nice little used Kia to get back and forth from the university in, not the brand new, Audi convertible. Then it might say, as our younger beneficiary becomes a young adult, has been educated, it might say as they move through their 20s and into their 30s, the allowance might be a lump sum.
Okay.
To help them start a business, to get a graduate degree, to make the down payment on a home, or even to pay for a wedding.
So you can make it for absolutely anything.
That's right. That's right. But there are certain standards that are pretty routine in our estate planning world. And the vast majority of my clients find this very comforting, that there's some structure that they could leave behind in the off chance that they do die too young to help their children navigate adulthood. The truth of the matter is that the vast majority of my middle-aged and retiring clients are never going to see those trust clauses in action, not because they're going to pass away, but because they're going to use every dollar that they have in their retirement and golden age years. And that's why what Jubal does is so critical. I might put beautiful paperwork in place to provide
but
for children.
No money.
But if there's no money, or if people outlive their money, that's where family financial planning is critical.
Well, let's pivot back over here to Jubal. And I would have to think that you have to get a good financial planner to manage all these things for you so this doesn't happen. What would be good characteristics for your financial planner? And what do you guys do over at Morgan Stanley that does that?
Sure. You're going to want someone that has some experience in their advising and role, maybe 5 years plus or more, at least as sort of a minimum. It also depends, what type of expertise do you need to have in place. Business owners are a little more complicated, so you want to make sure you're working with a certified financial planner who understands and has the contacts with the other trusted advisors to make sure that things will be taken care of in a prompt order.
Mm-hmm.
But also someone who's going to work with you and be comfortable. We're sitting down with clients all the time, so you got to make sure, one, you're comfortable with having a meal with this person.
Definitely.
Because we're going to work very closely with our clients and at least be in touch with them sometimes 12 times a year, 24 times a year. The amount of contact you have with them is really as much as the client needs.
Well, definitely. You're going to know all their dirty little secrets, everything about them. I guess it's a bad term to say, but you know very personal details about them that they don't tell their best friend.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's sort of where the trust factor comes in. We're not divulging client information out to everyone in the world. It's actually very kept within our firm and is very sacred within our firm. I share information with other trusted advisors only after the client has instructed me to and that they're okay with doing that.
Definitely.
Yeah, that's something that I should also probably clarify. My rules of legal ethics dictate that I can't share anything a client tells me, either a nosy family matter or a difficult family matter or a financial fact, with anyone else. Unless, and in my case, they sign an engagement agreement, which indicates they are comfortable with me sharing certain facts about their file with a trusted advisor. And then they give me that contact information for that trusted advisor and specifically release me to talk to that other advisor about their file.
Wow. Well, this has been great information. We're starting to run out of time. So can you guys give me the contact information for our listeners, how they can reach out to you?
Sure. for myself, I mean, I'm pretty much the only Jubal in the city of Atlanta.
How do you spell that? Let everyone
know. J-U-B-A-L. If you Google that, you're gonna pretty much find me at Morgan Stanley, but Jubal Gatwood at Morgan Stanley.
All right.
And I'm Catherine Seabolt. That's S-E-A-B-O-L-T. And I'm a solo practitioner. You can find my website at www.kseaboltlaw.com, all lowercase. And I can also be reached at 404-255-5655.
Well, thank you both for being on. And, Christine, you have to be beaming with pride of having these kind of people at the Sandy Springs Chamber.
Absolutely.
Just this quality. This
absolutely.
Is just absolutely amazing. Well, thank you, all three of you, for coming on. It's great. Do we have any more information to get over the Sandy Springs Chamber? All right. Well, this is Kevin Finn for Christine Heller and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you next time on High Velocity Radio.